Okay. First, I would like to thank the organizers. It's a great pleasure to be here and to speak at this conference. I'll be telling you about some recent work done with Tim Edemo and Miguel Paulus on the description of space-time CFTs from the Riemann sphere. So in this work, we want to describe some space-time physics from some 2D physics. Now, the canonical example of this is string theory, where we calculate some scattering amplitudes in terms of a correlation function and a two-dimensional theory. So then we have the loop expansion is the genus expansion, and the field theory limit is when you take the slope alpha prime to zero. Then you get from this, from the sphere, the tree diagrams, etc. In the target space is space-time, or a supersymmetric version of space-time. And the dimensionality of space-time is fixed by the quantum consistency of the 2D physics. Now, inspired by string theory, over the last, now almost 15 years, there has been a lot of work on rule chip models of field theories. So this is the description of perturbative field theories of massless particles. The goal is to obtain some nice formulas for scattering amplitudes, which are not very obvious from the Feynman diagram perspective. So here, in these models, the idea is that this is an equality. The target space is not space-time directly, but it's associated to the null structure of space-time. It's typically a space of null rays, of complexified space-time. And the modular integrations that you have to do in string theory over the modulized space of the Riemann surfaces is here completely localized by some equations known as the scattering equations. So let me give you a historical perspective of the relation between these Wolchit models and the scattering equations. So the first Wolchit model of this type was proposed by Witten. It's twister string theory. So the target space here is twister space, which is a construction specifically related to four-dimensional Minkowski space. And then based on this Wolchit model, there's a formula for amplitudes of gauge theory in four dimensions, which is the RSV formula, based on a version of the scattering equations. And later there was some extension of these developments for supergravity in four dimensions. However, there was not really a lot of progress at loop level. The problem is that the theory contained other states that would run in the loops, and they could not be projected out. Now, the recent development started with the work of Cacciasoghi and Yuan, who understood much more generally the role of the scattering equations in describing the scattering of massless particles. And so they proposed formulas for several theories which are somehow a generalization of this RSV formula. Now, there's a Wolchit model, a type of Wolchit model related to these scattering equations, which is ambitwister string theory. So here, ambitwister space is a space of null rays, of complexified space-time, and it exists for any number of dimensions. So somehow, this case can be thought of as a particular case, although technically they look a bit different. Now, this has led to progress for several theories. It's a much more flexible formalism, and very importantly, it has led to progress at loop level. And it has some surprises in how the loop corrections can be computed in these models. And we'll hear about this from Yvonne in the next talk. Now, we would like to know, since we have these models for perturbative field theories, if we can use them to calculate something else other than scattering amplitudes at the perturbative level still. There has been recent work on formulas analogous to the ones of CHY for form factors. But our idea for this talk is to study correlation functions perturbatively for conformal field theories. So we will not go very far in this, but you'll see where we get. So we'll put together the use of these Wolchit models and the use of the formalism of the projective null cone to describe conformal kinematics. So the basis of this is that the conformal transformations in these space-time dimensions, or Euclidean space, if you want, they are related, they are in correspondence to Lorentz transformations in a space which has two higher dimensions. So if this is Euclidean, this is Minkowski. If this is Minkowski, this has two times. So in the Euclidean case, then these are the groups. And so the idea is to write a world shift model which somehow is based on this projective null cone. So this is the outline of the talk. First, I'll tell you about this projective null cone. Then I'll review the Amitusser strings, and I will propose our new world shift models, which are somehow an extension of these Amitusser strings. And I'll describe their quantization, at least as far as we understand it, and hopefully I'll say something about three-point functions. Okay, so this idea, the projective null cone, goes back to Dirac, and several people have worked on it over the decades. Recently, it has been used in the context of holography. We were particularly inspired by some work by Isaac Bars. So we take this higher dimensional space, which we can call the embedding space, and we take a flat metric on it. So these Greek indices are in the embedding space, and then we have these two light cone coordinates and these coordinates on space-time. Then the projective null cone is defined by the point such that x squared vanishes, so this is the null cone, and then the quotient by this vector field, which is the same as saying that we identify points which just differ by scaling. So this reduces the dimension in two and takes you to space-time. To make this specific, we can choose to describe the coordinates like this. So we take the first coordinate is x plus, then we solve for x minus such that x squared vanishes. And then this guy here, this little x, is the coordinate in space-time. Then a Lorentz transformation on the embedding space is a conformal transformation on space-time. So notice that this is non-trivial. There's here this Lorentz transformation on the numerator and the denominator, and this is quadratic in little x. Now, why is this useful? Well, let's consider some field defined on the projective null cone. Because it's defined only up to the scaling of x, you need some sort of homogeneity property like this. Then there is a rule of how to describe a conformal field in little d dimensions based on that. So this power of x plus essentially kills the dependence on this scaling. And this delta is then identified as a scaling dimension of these fields. So let me give you an example of the application of this. If you take the two-point function on the embedding space, this can only depend on x dot y, and because of this scaling, it must have these exponents. So now you do this, you apply this coordinatization, and you get this guy. So then when you take the two-point function of these space-time fields, you just get these red parts, which is what you expect. It is very easy to see, for instance, for the three-point function, and also there is an analogous map for fields of higher spin. Now, let's consider the phase space of massless particles. So in space-time, we have x and p, and p squared vanishes. So this will be the thing to have in mind for Amitusser strings, this description of the phase space. So the dimension is 2d minus 1, or in terms of big D, 2d minus 5. Now, in terms of the embedding space, this phase space, you take capital X and P, and then there are these restrictions. You have X squared vanishing, that's the null cone, and then you get these two other conditions related to the motion of the massless particle, which must lie in this null cone. And then you further project out the scalings of X and P. So you can check that this actually reduces to this space. So our models will be based on this description of the phase space. And why do we want to do this? Well, the vertex operators in the Amitusser strings describe on-shell states in the scattering problem. And the intuition here is that in these models, the analogous vertex operators will describe single field insertions in the CFT. Okay, so let me review this ME-Twister string story. We heard already a talk on the scattering equations just before lunch. So you consider n massless particles, so on shell conditions and conservation of momentum. And with these two conditions, you can define a one form on the sphere, which is this one, which has simple poles at these points at I, whose residues are the momenta. Then the content of the scattering equations is that this p squared vanishes everywhere on the sphere. Now, it looks like this might have double poles, but it won't because k's are null. So it only has simple poles, and then it's enough to say that to have this condition, it's enough to say that the residue of all those poles vanishes. And the residue is just the scattering equations. So this p, this one form on the sphere, is the natural object that describes the scattering equations. Okay, so Mazur and Skinner proposed these ambitwister strings as the world shape model that naturally incorporates this. So this is the phase space I mentioned before. Now you also quotient by this vector field, which means that you identify points. Like, you don't want to count several times points along the same null array. You want to count only one null array. Yes? Sorry, it's SL to C is for transformations of the Zs. It's just the coordinate transformation on the sphere. So here, I'm just thinking about it as, just as acting on Z as a coordinate on the sphere. So because this Z transforms and this guy transforms and the whole thing is invariant if you have these conditions. So it's like an invariant statement. Okay, so this is the space of null arrays. You're identifying points along the same null array. And if you start with a complexified spacetime, then this is the so-called ambitwister space. Moreover, because P is a one form, its component is only defined up to holomorphic rescaling. So this is, if you further model out by the scalings of P, this is called projective ambitwister space. So what are these models? Well, here's the action. It's the chiral complexification of the action for a massless particle. So this would be for a massless particle if you integrate over the world line, and this is a simple differential. But now you integrate over the Riemann surface, and then this d-bar operator is this one. And P is a one form. You have dz and dz bar. You can integrate over the sphere. This E is an appropriate tensor to integrate this. It has one component. And it's a Lagrange multiplier enforcing that p squared vanishes. Now, there is a gauge freedom in this action where you translate x by something proportional to p. And this is precisely this condition we have related to the null array, that you identify points along the same null array. So here, this is the target space. So notice that there's a gauge field-like change for E that compensates the transformation for X. Now we can proceed with the quantization, more or less as in string theory. I can gauge fix this E to zero. So there'll be some obstructions to doing this at insertions of the vertex operators. And what this means then is that you can incorporate these into some delta functions in the integrated vertex operators. And this will give you how these delta functions that appear in the formulas of CHY. Okay, so the action is linear in X, and you can also put these exponentials, these guys in the action, so then it's also linear in X, and you can integrate X exactly. Gives you an equation for P, and on the sphere, the solution to this equation is this P. So this, together with this, gives you that the formulas will be localized by the scattering equations. Now here, there is no alpha prime. There's no XX OPE. So the conformal weight of this plane wave is zero. So you can't play around with putting lots of operators here, as in string theory. And this cuts off the spectrum just to the massless case. Now, as in string theory, you can combine with other world shape matter, here other chiral CFTs, to produce the formulas that CHY proposed. And in the cases known, you have two CFTs, and then the formulas, the integrand factorizes in this way. We saw some examples for gravity gauge theory and this bijoint scalar in the talk by Emil. And these are exactly the examples that Mazin and Skinner first dealt with. So in the bosonic case, you have two current algebras. And this gives you formulas for a scalar, which has a phi cube interaction, but it lives in the adjoints of two color groups associated, each one to one of these current algebras. And the cubic vertex is then dressed with these structure constants. In the heterotic case, you have one current algebra and one system of fermions. This is the action for the system of fermions. There's a kinetic term. And then there's a constraint, p dot psi, which is enforced by this Lagrange multiplier, which is fermionic now. And this leads to formulas for Jengel's amplitudes. And finally, we have the type 2 case, where we have two systems of fermions, psi and psi tilde, and this leads to formulas for supergravity amplitudes. And there's several other models that were engineered in order to reproduce the formulas that were proposed by Cacciaso and Yuan for theories like the nonlinear Sigma model and others. Okay, so this will be the basis for our that we'll follow. And we will also deal with models which are bosonic, heterotic, and type 2. But now they will be based on this projective null cone. So here is the action for the bosonic model. Now we have this capital P and X from the embedding space. And in the constraints, we have these constraints I showed you before. P squared, x squared, and p dot x. These E's are Lagrange multipliers that enforce the constraints. And now recall that P is a one form. So these guys have different conformal weights, and so these E's will have also different conformal weights. You can also couple this to Wolschmidt gravity. Normally in the literature, this always appears just D bar, but yeah, this would be the complex structure deformation corresponding to that. What are the symmetries of this? We have the dimensional Lorentz symmetry. We have diffeomorphisms and Weyl symmetry. And so we can have a conformal anomaly, just like in string theory. However, here we have a further symmetry. We have a symmetry between X and P. And this is the linearized form of the symmetry. So because P is a one form and X is a scalar, then these guys, these alphas, will need to be appropriate for this to make sense. And this is, well, they transform like a gauge field, like a non-Abelian gauge field. So you can put them together into these SL2 gauge fields. And you can exponentiate this. These components have mixed conformal weights. And it's non-dynamical because it has no kinetic term. Now, this is the heterotic case. We consider a supersymmetric extension of the null cone. So now we have only one current algebra, and we have one system of fermions. And we have this psi dot p that already appears. It's of the same type as a constraint that appears in the Amitwister string, but now we also need this psi dot x. Notice that we actually need it. There's an algebra of constraints here, which is the OPE of the constraint with the other constraint, if you know about 2D CFT. So you are forced to have this guy if you have the other ones. Meaning that OPE of two constraints must be either null or give you another constraint in the singularity. And this is the type 2 model. So now we have two systems of fermions, and we have a bunch of constraints, the same that we saw before for the two systems, but there's an additional constraint, which has that psi tilde must vanish. And then the symmetries of these models are as we saw before, but there's a SUSY extension of this SL2 symmetry that now mixes X, P, and these fermions. Okay, so let's discuss the quantization. The first thing we do is to, so let's start with the bosonic case. We just gauge fix those Lagrange multipliers to zero, and we introduce some ghosts to compensate for that. So we have four systems of ghosts, one for left-moving diffeomorphisms, and then the other three for this SL2 symmetry. Then we get a free action, which is simple to work with. These are the DOPs for P and X and for B and C, so they only talk to the other guy from the same family. And we can then define the BRST charge. So this is the formalism of to DCFT, the BRST operator X via the residue map. So it's defined in terms of some currents, and then you take, if you act with the BRST charge on a certain operator, you take the OPE with the currents, and you take the residue. And now you can take the action of the charge on itself to check whether it is nilpotent. And you get a term like this, involving only these SL2 ghosts, which has these coefficients. And this tells you that if you want to kill this anomaly, then you need to have D equals 8. If you then set D equals 8, you get this for the conformal anomaly. So in principle now, you can just choose the current algebras such that their central charges will kill these coefficients. And then the Q is nilpotent. Okay, so this is the same type of constraints as the one in string theory that gives you the critical dimension if you decide to do it in this approach. Okay, so in the heterotic case, now we have more ghosts for the fermionic symmetries, and the absence of the SL2 anomaly, or rather the Suzy extension of this SL2 anomaly, says that D must be 6. And then you can fix, you can kill the conformal anomaly if you want by fixing some central charge for your current algebra. And finally, you have the type 2 case with yet more ghosts, and here the absence of the anomaly requires D equals 4. So then you cannot play around it, you don't have another degree of freedom, and if you set this to kill the SL2 anomaly, you can't kill the conformal anomaly. Okay, so these are the models, bosonic, heterotic, and type 2. And now their critical dimension, expressed in terms of the space-time dimension and not the embedding space, are 6, 4, and 2. Now, what theories are classically conformal invariants in these number of dimensions? Well, in 6 dimensions, it's phi cubed theory. And here, because of the colors, you expect the bijoint scalar. In 4 dimensions, Yang-Mills. And in 2 dimensions, gravity, which is not only conformal, but actually topological in 2 dimensions, because the Einstein-Hilbert term is a topological invariant. Okay, so now let's look at the states in these theories. Let's consider the vertex operators. So now I'll just take the analogs of the vertex operators from the ambitwister string. And here's the guy for the bosonic case. So there are some ghosts, and then you have these 2 currents from the current algebras. So this is the OPE of a current algebra. K is the level, and there's another formula like this for J tilde. And then you have this function of the field X. Now, you want this to be BRST closed. And this imposes conditions on this F. It imposes that F must satisfy a wave equation in an embedding space, and also that it has some homogeneity property for scalings of X. And together, this tells you, according to the rule that I showed you before, of how a field on the projective null cone relates to a space-time field, that it represents a space-time scalar field in 6 dimensions with the scaling dimension 2, and then this wave equation turns into the space-time wave equation, or Laplace equation if it's Euclidean, for phi. Now, because you have these 2 color currents, then this is naturally associated to the bijoint scalar. You can actually solve this equation for a family of solutions that gives you the tower of conformal descendants. So you have a primary solution, which is given in this way. So you can think about it like this. So this y is null, so it's also corresponding to a space-time point. And the interpretation of this is that this is the field created by an insertion at this space-time point y. And then you have the other solutions, which will be associated to the conformal descendants. So there's this object P here, which must be transverse to y. There are other vertex operators whose interpretation is not as obvious, and we will need to understand that better at some point. So for the hadronic case, this is the natural candidate. So there are some ghosts, and you have just one current, color currents, and this A. This is the BRST closure condition, and this tells you that this A will descend from the projective null cone into a space-time A gauge field in four dimensions, scaling dimension one, and satisfying the Maxwell equations. Notice that, yeah, the vertex operators must satisfy linearized equations of motion. For the type 2 case, we have this, where we have this little h, and it looks more complicated, but it leads to this guy descending into a space-time graviton in two dimensions, and satisfying these vacuum Einstein equations. So by this, I mean that the constraint that appears on x, similar to this, can be associated to this constraint for this space-time h. Okay, and again, we need to understand better the space of vertex operators, but we'll focus on these ones because these ones look very interesting. So this here's the summary. Now, I told you that there were this, that there was this conformal anomaly for the type 2 case. The bosonic and the hadronic case actually also have an anomaly, which is not as obvious from what I told you. It means that you can't put it on a curved background in a diffeomorphism invariant way. So that's one way of seeing it. Another way of seeing it is that there are bad vertex operators, like bad gravitons, for instance, for the bosonic case. Now, so this also occurs in the M-Mutusser strings. What happens is that if you just do the correlation function without these guys, you just have the interesting objects, then you get the formula that applies to that field theory. So if you restrict yourself to doing calculations on the Riemann sphere, then these guys will not ruin your calculations, at least at tree level. At loops, however, of course, it's much stricter. So in principle, we can't put these at higher genus. These are not really string theories. String theories are very restrictive. Yes?
Yes, this
little thing is what? Is space-time dimension or is that they are not really then string theories. But the string theories are very restrictive. And that's good for string theories. But what we want here is a formalism that is more flexible. And it allows us to have string-like expressions for field theory at the perturbative level. And in particular, as we will hear from Yvonne, so there is one case in which the higher genus expansion works for the M-Mutusser strings, and in that case, we can relate it to a different type of expansion. Which is not a genus expansion, but is a nodal expansion on the sphere. And then the idea is that maybe that is actually the generic loop expansion for these models, which is less restrictive. So here we want to have a consistent set of rules that are more relaxed than the ones for string theories. Okay, so let me also comment on how these models relate to the M-Mutusser strings. So this is the basic action that we're working with. Now, in the previous gauge fixing, when we want to do explicit calculations, we've set these Lagrange multipliers to zero, and then we just get the free action. But now we can do something else. For instance, we can solve explicitly these constraints for x squared and p dot x in this way. So this is the one we had before already. And then we do the same for p. It guarantees that this guy is zero in terms of some space-time, little x and little p. Then, if we do a certain field redefinition, this is just the M-Mutusser string action. And this goes similarly for the hadronic case. We do this to the fermions. However, it's not quite for the type 2 case. There's a constraint mixing the two type of fermions that remains and that does not exist in the M-Mutusser string theory. So what this constraint does is that actually for M-Mutusser strings, you get, for type 2, the massless spectrum is graviton in the NSNS sector, graviton, dilaton, B field. Whereas here, we only got the graviton. and is exactly this constraint which kills the other guys. But at least for the heterotic and the bosonic case, these are the same theories. But for a special number of dimensions where the theories are conformal, we can uplift them to the null cone. Okay, so now we can look at what was actually our goal, which was to compute some correlation functions. So the vertex operators are consistent with the CFT interpretation. We looked at the spectrum. And then we can just try to calculate the correlation function on a sphere. And the hope is that this will give us a true-level contribution to the CFT correlators. So we can test it for three-point functions. What do we have to do? Well, we again gauge fix it to the free action. There are some abstractions to doing that. For at the vertex operator insertions, this will lead to some delta functions that that enforce the constraints at the insertions. This is similar to what I said before about how the scattering equations appeared in amplitude strings from these constraints. And then you also need to saturate Gauss zero modes as you normally have to do in string theory. Now, based on this, we write down a prescription for correlation functions, which I write here for the three-point case. It's not really completely derived because, so notice that there are some delta functions here related to x squared and x dot p. There is not one here for p squared because they only appear starting at four insertions. And say this guy has a weird form. We don't quite know how this appears, but we know that it does the job in the path interval when we do it explicitly. So this is like a sensible prescription. And we now apply to the bosonic case. We consider the vertex operators for this object that we looked at before, which corresponds to having an insertion of a primary field at some spacetime point y. And this is what you get. So the color part looks right. It's like the three-point vertex, the color part of the three-point vertex. And the spacetime dependence, well, if we're doing anything at all which is sensible, it must come out like this because it's completely fixed by conformal invariance. So this is exactly what we would expect for the correlation function of these embedding space fields. For the heterotic case, we also get something expected. In the type 2 case, there's an issue with the C ghost related to this extra constraint that only appears for the type 2. If you saturate it or not, it seems that either case the correlator vanishes. So if we take this at face value, the interpretation is possibly that since 2D gravity is topological, maybe we should just expect this correlator to be zero anyway. However, there's much more to understand. And in particular, our goal in doing this was to obtain for correlation functions some formulas that would be similar to the CHY formulas for scattering amplitudes. To do that, remember, when I talked about the amplitude strings, there was this exact X integration that gave this one form P on the sphere. And here we need some exact integration which is analogous to it, and we have to somehow massage our fields. Now we have some idea of where we want to get. Okay, so let me conclude. I proposed a new type of worksheet models for classical field, conformal field theories based on the projective null cone. There was an anomaly in the worksheet theory that identified the space-time dimension for which the field of Higgins spin is conformal invariant. And we looked at vertex operators and three-point functions that support the proposal. So this is a new example of 2D physics encoding space-time physics. There are many open questions. The biggest one for us is the one that I just mentioned. We would like to have general formulas for true-level correlation functions. So this means for any number of field insertions. And we would expect some sort of analog of the CHY formulas. We need to understand better the space of vertex operators of the worksheet theory and how it relates to the operators of the CFT. Now, for the four-dimensional gauge theory case, there is actually a different, there's actually a Nebbi twister model based on twistorial variables. And here, if we would do that, we would need to somehow lift it to the embedding space of 6 dimensions, and it would be interesting to know if we can do this, because this may be more appropriate to compute, say, correlators in this theory. And finally, is there some hope of getting quantum corrections from this type of model? Notice that here, well, at least to start with, we'll be only concerned of getting a sensible integrands. And so this is just a rational function, and it's not crazy to expect something like this. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you, Ricardo, for a very clear talk. Any questions? Andy?
Is there any meaning to the theories in the embedding space before you project? So, for example, in your supersymmetric one, you had a theory, a conformal theory, I guess, involving gravity, in which had two-dimensional conformal invariants, but you might think of it as a theory just with Lorentz invariants, 2 dimensions higher. So the original parent theory would be Lorentz invariant, though not conformally invariant. Is there any meaning to those?
Well, I guess this is a question independent of the Wolchik models, but of the,
well, the same
the embedding space formalism in general. Well, I guess it is a theory, but it is defined on this projective space, because the fields are not just any fields living on this embedding space. They have to be well defined on this projective null cone, which means that they must have this homogeneity property when you scale x. So somehow,
right? You could drop that.
Sorry.
You could drop that restriction and get a theory that lived in the embedding space.
I don't quite know, but so if you drop that restriction, then you won't be able to relate it to a lower dimensional theory. Like this reduction from the embedding space, which has 2 higher dimensions, to the space-time, is based on this projective null cone, which has both the null cone condition, which has 1 dimension, and then the scaling condition, which is another dimension.
That's exactly what I'm asking. Is there an interesting interpretation of some higher dimensional theory? Okay, anyway.
Yeah, so. Sorry, I can't see geometrically what it would be at the moment.
And while I have the microphone, what does a planar diagram mean in terms of your world sheets?
Is a planar diagram?
Is there some simple interpretation of what a planar diagram is?
So since this is all at tree level, I guess everything is planar here. Now in the Abbe Tuister strings, there is some progress at at loop level, and from the point of view of the world sheets, I'm not quite sure what is the meaning of non-planarity, but you can get indeed a correlator which also contains the non-planar part. Essentially, the non-planarity is related to the Well, I think there is no notion of planarity here. So in generically, this is non-planar. Then, when you have some color, then you can use it to split the graphs between planar and non-planar. And this is related to the current algebra. So in the current algebra, you do the correlator of your current algebra, and you'll have some single trace terms, or some double trace terms, and some other terms. Here at tree level, we have to restrict to the single trace terms, say for Jengel's theory, and at loop level, there would be at one loop double trace terms for gauge theory in the Abbe Tuister string. In these models, this is just all tree level at the moment.
Other questions?
So in the usual Abbe Tuister string, you have this constraint that modes out by the scalings of P, and here you do the same by the scalings of X, right? But and so that you get into this project icon. Do you have any intuition what happens if you try to do both things? So you have both a constraint that multiply translations in this null geodesics, and then you try to impose that the X's live on the projective line.
You mean on the Amethyst string or on our models?
It's not none of those. It's if you try to impose both constraints, if that makes any sense.
Well, in these models, actually, so in the beginning, it is defined, the phase space, according to this projective null cone, if you, this viewpoint, you scale by, you do scale by, you do quotient by the scalings of X and P. But this is, so in the action, you only see these constraints, but actually the scalings, so the scaling of P appears because P is a one form, and so the components only defined up to holomorphic rescaling. But then there are symmetries in the action, which this SL2 symmetry, part of it is then related to the scaling of X.
Okay, so then if you drop the constraint that scales X, I mean P, and you get just a theory where you're moding out by...
Well, you can't really choose that if P is a one form.
Thanks.
So, other questions?
So is it easy to see consistent OPE at like an interpretation in terms of the world sheet? I mean, like in the usual scattering equation, you have the factorization is now, and you can see it into a factorization on the world sheet. Mm-hmm. But now you're mapping into position space. So the natural thing that you will want to see is that the correlation function has consistent OPE factorization. So.
Sorry, in terms of the Amethyst string, so at level of the, I mean, you want to see that scattering equations factorize, right?
Right, so now you want to see that the correlation function has the correct OPE behavior.
I guess, so you mean that as a check of a correlation function, for instance? But you know, first we need to have higher point correlation functions in order to think about this. That's right, but the issue is that you want to have a complete calculation. So the issue is that we have to rearrange the fields so that we have these exact integrations, such as we have in the Amethyst string, and this is the missing ingredient. But we have an idea of what are the formulas that we want to get to. So this has to come out, this formalism. And once we have these correlation functions, then we can perform this type of test.
Other questions? Yes.
Yeah, maybe you said this already, but I missed it. How complete is the classification of theories that you can get?
Incomplete.
Okay. So you expect there to be more serious.
So essentially, for the Amethyst strings, there was initial proposal because there were initial formulas for Bayesian scalar, Yang-Mills, gravity. So the Amethyst strings, they wanted to first give those ones. Then CHY came up with a bunch of other formulas, the Lyrio-Sibo model, Einstein-Yang-Mills, whatever. And then we tried to engineer world-shift models to satisfy this. But then, you know, the thing is that we don't know yet what is the constructive way of doing it from the world sheets.
But you're more limited here since you're looking for conformal theories.
Yeah, so. That's right. So this was a particular application to conformal theories.
I think I might know the answer already, but what is the chance of doing this for massive fields?
Initially, you may think that the formalism is very much connected to massless particles. However, there have been recent formulas proposed, say, for these form factors that I mentioned at some points, where you can always write down a massive momentum in terms of two massless momenta. maybe this can be followed through into making a formalism. Whether that formalism would be very practical or not, would be as nice as for the Maslow's case, then I can't say. But it would certainly be nice to know if this is possible in principle.
Other questions? I guess I have a question. You're used to canceling anomalies, but suppose you have a theory with a non-trivial SL2C anomaly. What goes wrong? Is it physically inconsistent?
Well, the SL2 anomaly, I would say, is more important for our goals because it means that this reduction on the null cone is true at the quantum level. So it could be something, but it wouldn't be a conformal field theory then.
So I
would expect. Yes, for instance. Yeah, maybe to have some application, I can say.
Other questions? Okay, let's thank Ricardo again. And we'll reconvene at 3:30.